Good afternoon. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. My name is Kathleen McCoy. I'm your host today, and our topic is all things chicken. We're talking about backyard chickens today, and we've got a wonderful guest with us in the studio, Steve Brown. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Kathleen.
And he's unofficially known as the chicken guy in our state. We hope to hear from chicken owners who are raising chickens and have some tips they'd like to share with us and beginner goofs you can avoid by sharing it with us. Or also, if you've got questions, Steve's here with lots of information for your questions. I just want you to know you can call us at 550-8433 in Anchorage, or statewide it's 1-888-353-5752. And our email is a little different, so listen up. It's hometown@alaskapublic.org. We'll take your emails during the show and read them on the air. And one other thing, I want you to know this program repeats tonight at 7, but you can't call in then, so this is your one time to call in. We've got some great links on our website, alaskapublic.org, that Steve gave me some, people who raise chickens in town gave me some, so there's some great resources on alaskapublic.org. So, Steve, welcome to Hometown Alaska, and welcome to the Backyard Chicken Show.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to come on.
I want to ask you, how did you become known as the Chicken Guy, and what is the Chicken University?
Well, Chicken University is a program that was started by the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension Service. About 4 years ago, we noticed that a person was selling guaranteed laying hens on Craigslist for a mere $100, which is about $90 more than they're worth. And we started investigating this, and we discovered there'd been a huge increase in people wanting to raise chickens in Alaska. But there wasn't a very big increase in the knowledge level. So we started Chicken University as a cooperative extension outreach program to teach people, whether they live in Anchorage or out in the bush, how to raise chickens in Alaska.
So you travel the state to teach chicken details?
Yes, I have. I've gotten to see a lot of Alaska thanks to a bird that can't fly.
And so we've got chickens in Bethel. Do we have chickens in Barrow? Do we have chickens in McGrath?
There are chickens just about everywhere across the state. I cannot think of a community right now that doesn't have chickens.
Wow.
You walk the streets of Kotzebue and you'll hear a rooster crow.
So we're thinking moose, bear, but really the chicken is out there.
Right.
So, now, Chicken University is a class people can take, right? And how often is it offered?
Well, we offer it periodically around the state as we get the opportunity to travel. It's offered most frequently in the Mat-Su Valley and here in Anchorage. If you want to find out when the next one is scheduled, just call your local cooperative extension office, and we can get you signed up for it. We don't currently have any scheduled for the remainder of the summer, but as we go into the fall, we'll be doing more of the Chicken University classes with an eye towards preparing your flock for the coming winter.
Right, because the temperatures drop and gets cold, and there's another whole set of chores probably you have to do.
There sure are.
Yeah. Now, I'm interested, as you travel around the state and teach Chicken University, and as you teach it here in Anchorage, what's the audience like?
You can't say that there is a typical audience member. There will be elderly old ladies who have never raised chickens to little kids. Commonly, we'll see mothers with children that are thinking about raising chickens as a homeschool project, or teachers. A lot of teachers will raise chickens for their classrooms.
Just in the classroom. Mm-hmm.
We'll see people that grew up on farms and remember their chicken flock, and it's kind of like a connection back to childhood.
Some nostalgia takes over there. They want to bring back a little of their childhood.
Right.
Now, that's true of you, right?
Well, that's true. I was a 4-H'er in Vernon, Texas. The 4-H poultry project was my first 4-H project. It was my introduction to chickens, and for the most part, I've had chickens pretty much ever since.
You know, when I think about the state fair and 4-H, I am surprised that Alaskans were behind the curve on what to pay for a good layer, a guaranteed layer. I mean, I guess there's communities that know, and then there's urbanites that don't know.
Well, I think you have a lot of people that move to Alaska who have never been in a situation where they could raise chickens before. You know, they move out to the Mat-Su and they've got a little bit of acreage, and they don't want a farm, but they want to feel like they have a farm. And so people sometimes think that chickens are like raising a dog, and it's a completely different animal with different needs, certainly a lot less intelligence, which requires more intelligence on your part.
You got to take care of those chickens.
Right.
Because they're not going to take care of themselves.
Well, you know, there's the romantic notion of the chicken roaming freely around the yard. And yeah, that's a romantic notion, but that's also a dead chicken before long, too.
That's a sad story. Well, let's talk about some of the things that you have to teach people. What are some of the misconceptions people have about raising chickens?
Well, the first thing is we teach people that raising chickens is not a way to save money. Okay, you cannot compete with the grocery store prices for chicken and eggs. It's just not going to happen. However, a lot of people like to raise chickens because they want to know where their food is from and what it's being fed. So the first one, the economic notion is no, chickens are not going to save you money. The second notion is that it's not a whole lot of work. Chickens need to be taken care of every day. And if it's in wintertime, it's probably going to be several times a day.
Mm.
And if you're off the grid, it guaranteed in the wintertime, it will be three or four times a day that you're out watering those birds.
Wow. Let's talk about some of the expenses. I mean, say you know, Anchorage just passed an ordinance that says you can have five chickens in your backyard. So if somebody wants to get started, what do they have to do?
Well, the first thing that a chicken needs is protection. That it needs a chicken coop, okay, that can protect it from animals and protect it from the weather, and one that's insulated that can keep it warm. The second thing they need is something that, you know, they can drink water out of, a feeder. Now, you can put feed on the ground, but that can get a little sloppy. I always like to say that any good Alaskan has everything in their front yard that they need to raise chickens. You can improvise. An old hubcap will make a great feeder.
I saw a note the other day on a Facebook page, I think, that was someone was selling a kid's backyard gym. It was kind of a round kind of oval thing, and the person was saying this would make a great coop, you know, if you'd have to dress it up, of course. So,
well, there's a one around here called a chicken coop, which is literally an old van that someone converted into a chicken coop.
There you go. So almost anything can be converted. What's your coop?
My coop is actually a horse stall in our barn right now. If you've got a horse stall, that's a great, great start for a chicken coop because there's lots of room, and I use what's called the deep litter method to take care of the chicken manure and keep them corralled.
Now, I want to go to that because that's one of the hot topics, literally, what to do with all that chicken manure. But we've got some calls coming in, and I want to go to the phones. So, Lynn, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you.
What's your question?
Well, I am a chicken owner of a number of years, but I've never really, I don't think, learned a whole lot about them. And just recently, I have a flock that's new this year, and one of the chickens had trouble moving around and getting up, and all the other chickens, four other hens, were pecking at it and just relentless to this chicken when they'd already kind of worked out their pecking order before, so this was new. And then the chicken kind of bloated up a little bit and upped and died. So I'm wondering if there were, it was really interesting to me that they kind of all went after this chicken for a day or so ahead of time. And I don't know what I was looking for, and just was curious if Steve had any ideas on what it might have died from, I guess.
Well, without talking to a vet, it's all speculation. At first, it sounded like your chicken might have had a riboflavin deficiency, which sometimes results in them being crippled and having curled toes and things like that. Unfortunately, chickens can be ruthless, and once they decide you're at the bottom of the pecking order, they will peck like that, and birds like that will have to be separated. One of the experiments that universities have done to basically illustrate chicken pecking behavior is if you take a white chicken and put a red spot on it, the other chickens will literally peck that spot to death.
Ooh, that's dark. The dark side of chicken life.
Well, it's unfortunate but true.
So that term pecking order is real for chickens.
Absolutely. in my flock, well, in any flock that you visit, there is a very definite social order. And there's going to be a top hen and a bottom hen. There's going to be a top rooster and there's going to be a bottom rooster. And if you have multiple roosters, the bottom rooster is usually going to be the guy that's really beaten up.
Is it a function of size and intelligence?
Well, I think it's a function of age and size. The older chickens will be more dominant. That's why we suggest that you try to keep a same-age flock if possible.
And Lynn, it sounds like it's challenging to introduce a new chicken into an existing flock. What do you say about that?
Actually, this wasn't a new chicken. It was they've been together from the get-go, and they didn't have any issues with kind of, you know, visible pecking order problems. But it seemed that once this one chicken got sick and it had kind of a bare bottom, like it had lost its feathers on the bottom, which I thought was maybe just due to perching. But once the chicken got sick, they just were relentless about trying to kill this chicken.
Hmm. Will they do that, Steve? Just
yes.
kill a weaker chicken?
It happens.
Uh-huh, yeah. Lindy, are your chickens more pet or more for egg laying, or why do you have chickens?
We have them for getting the eggs. Mm-hmm. We tend to keep them for 4 or 5 years, probably past when they're at their prime. But we just have enough to keep the family in eggs and occasionally give some away or sell them.
Mm-hmm. And that works for you?
It's great. Yeah, okay. It's great.
Any more questions for Steve?
No, just I was just curious about just a very healthy chicken just on its own, just kind of puffing up and dying was curious to me, and none of the other chickens seemed to have it. So I wanted to sort of prevent it, I guess, the other chickens from getting whatever it had.
Well, this is one of the things I would encourage you to develop a relationship with a vet, because these things, without a veterinary background, you know, we're only speculating. And chickens are like any other animal. They can catch diseases. The concern is that they catch a disease and pass it on to other birds. On the other hand, you have to be careful about doing Google searches for chicken diseases, because there's a lot of good information in a bad context out there. So
right.
I know of a lady who had a hen that went broody, and she thought it had a terrible disease because it wouldn't get off the nest, when in fact it was just in a motherly way. And this lady nearly killed her entire flock from information she'd gotten off the internet.
Ooh. Yeah. Well, I won't repeat that mistake. It died on its own.
And hopefully none of the other chickens are going to catch this.
Right. Well, thanks a lot. I really appreciate the information.
Thanks, Lynn, for calling.
Yep.
You know, Steve, I want to ask you, what does broody mean?
Broody basically is a term that's used when a hen wants to sit on the nest and start hatching her eggs. A hen that normally would run away from a person that wasn't hand tame, will, when she becomes broody, she won't get off the nest. Almost nothing diverts her attention from sitting on the nest. And that's kind of a weird behavior, particularly for a chicken that maybe is afraid of you because they won't leave the nest. But that's where the term broody in people comes from. You know, they're quiet.
Moody.
Right.
Moody. Yeah. Well, I want to put out our numbers there for people to call and get good information from you. If you're in Anchorage, it's 550-8433. Statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752. Or you can shoot us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. My guest today is Steve Brown. He's known informally as the Chicken Guy. He teaches Chicken University for the Cooperative Extension. You're an ag agent. Is that the right way to refer to you?
Right. The Cooperative Extension Service is the outreach component of the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And our job is to identify community needs and develop programming from the university to address those needs. And so Chicken University resulted when we discovered that there people needed to know a little bit more about raising chickens.
Yes, and we mentioned at the start of the hour that Anchorage has just made chickens, up to 5 chickens, legal in your backyard, whether you're in downtown Anchorage or up on the hillside. So I think this is probably going to lead to more people seeking you out, Steve, for good information.
Well, we sure hope so, because that's what we're there for. And while I think this ordinance is a very great thing for Anchorage, it's a very delicate ordinance at this point. And it really depends upon the chicken owners learning how to take care of their birds well and learning how to be good neighbors with their birds.
Let's talk about some of the things that can go wrong that could maybe make this ordinance go south.
Okay, well, The first one, though not the most important one, is roosters and loud birds. Roosters crow every hour of the day, especially in the summer, and they can be very, very annoying. I always like to say one rooster is atmosphere and two roosters are a nuisance. Well, in Anchorage, any rooster has the potential for being a nuisance. So sometimes a lot of people will say, well, you know, I bought my chickens and they were little and they said they were all hens, but there was a rooster in there. Well, there are ways to find good homes out in the valley for those
where
roosters.
They are legal.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So keeping the noisy birds, you know, the geese, the peacocks, the guinea fowl, out of Anchorage is really important. Now, the second concern, and really the one that's most important, is the chicken manure. Okay, making sure that doesn't drain out from under coops, making sure that it's utilized properly. Chicken manure is a tremendous resource for gardeners. It's one of the best fertilizers out there.
What's it made of? I mean, what's in it?
Well, chicken manure is what you would consider a 3-3-3 fertilizer. That means it's approximately 3% nitrogen, 3% phosphorus, and 3% potassium. That's would be considered a balanced fertilizer. It is, for an organic fertilizer, that's very high in nitrogen. And sometimes people make the mistake of applying raw chicken manure to their garden, and that has the potential to burn their plants, but it also has the potential for spreading E. coli.
Ooh.
One of the things that people can learn from the Cooperative Extension Service at no charge is how to properly compost their chicken manure so that it's safe to use on the garden and so that it doesn't have the potential to impact our water supply.
So would you compost your chicken manure separate? Or if you already have a compost pile, can you put your chicken manure into that compost pile, or do you have to do it separately?
It depends upon your coop. And don't let me forget to talk about the deep litter method of doing this.
Yes, yeah.
One of the things we recommend is get a little plastic kiddie pool, okay, and put it underneath your coop and collect the manure that way, and you can use that as a composting method, or you can compost on the ground. The important thing is to line it so that when it rains, the manure doesn't have the potential to run off and contaminate a wellhead. Now, what I do with my chickens, because I'm raising them in a horse stall, is we change the litter, basically pine shavings, twice a year, once in the spring and once in the fall. And as the chickens, you know, produce their manure, we add more pine shavings and we'll spread the manure evenly around the stall. And that basically slowly composts in the stall. And eventually it gets to the point where the stall fills up and we'll shovel it up and we apply it to our garden in the fall to get ready for winter.
So
and
how long does that process take? Then, like for a season?
It's about 6 months.
6 months. So you actually just do these layers on the floor.
Right.
And that's straw?
You can use straw. I think straw is a little bit harder to handle than pine shavings, mm-hmm. but straw works great.
Mm-hmm. And then by the time you're ready to shovel it out, it's actually ready for the garden?
Right.
Well, that seems pretty perfect.
Well, and it's nice, too, because for years, you know, I had to clean the coops basically every couple of days. With this method, you know, twice a year is not a bad deal.
No. How about smell?
Chicken smell. That's all there is to it.
Even when you're putting down the pine shavings and all that?
Right. You know how a wet dog smells? Well, a wet chicken's even worse. The important thing is to make sure that the odors from your chicken operation don't waft over to your neighbors.
How can you do that?
Well, making sure that, you know, you have, you know, five or fewer birds, okay? Mm. Making sure that your manure is controlled, you know, keeping your coop as far away from your neighbor's property line as you can is very helpful.
Now, the ordinance, I know that you deal with statewide and Anchorage's ordinance isn't really something that you're up on, but I think before they modified it, you had to be 100 feet from a property line, which was pretty hard to do in some lots in Anchorage, and the change was, I think, 10 feet from a property line. I think that's suitable?
That's my understanding. 10 feet is fine as long as you're conscientious. I really think if you're going to raise chickens, you need to go talk to your neighbor. And if you and your neighbor agree that chickens are a good thing, then do it. But if your neighbor doesn't like the idea, my suggestion is don't force the issue, because you're going to make an enemy there if they don't want it. Or perhaps you can work out a deal that's like, well, I'm going to get two chickens and let's see how that works out.
Hmm. And just take it slow.
Right.
Well, I wanted to give a shout out to Fred Dewey and Mary Ellen Ashton, who are two folks in Anchorage who called me this morning to tell me about their chickens. And one of the things they said was they started with five. They're down to one. And they say that's a good number for them because, you know, you get a lot of eggs. So you get about an egg a day per chicken, right?
Well, five, yes, that's true. And five chickens, you think about it, a young chicken, one that has not gone through its first molt, okay, will lay about an egg a day. So five chickens in 10 days, you've got 50 eggs. That's all.
Yeah.
That's more than most families can eat.
Right, right. And I know that Fred told me they use their eggs, you know, when they traveled, they might have a chicken sitter. So, you know, they could use their eggs as thank yous, you know, for people who are helping them out. So you're right, that can make for friendly neighbors. But a lot of people probably don't know what to expect. So if I go knock on my neighbor's door, they might. But I like your idea of, you know, let's start with one or two. And maybe one is too lonely. Can a single chicken be too little?
I'm not sure chickens get lonely per se. They are social animals. I would say most people that have them in Anchorage, they're pets primarily, and they're egg producers second. I know lots of people, my wife included, who become so attached to our chickens, and they're their friends.
Yeah. 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 I the friend of mine who was telling me about their chickens, they named their chickens Madeline for Madeline Albright and Condoleezza for Condoleezza Rice, partly because they saw a picture of Madeline Albright in the newspaper. She was in a black and white pantsuit. The chicken was black and white. It just fit. But then it turned out that these two chickens would strut around in the yard together, and it just seemed, you know, like they were secretaries of state. So.
Well, it's funny you should say that. My rooster's name is Khan after Ricardo Montalban in The Wrath of Khan from Star Trek.
That's great. That's great. So they take on some personality, clearly, you know.
They do. I like to say if you don't have a cable TV, there's nothing better to keep yourself entertained than a flock of chickens, because one of the great things about chickens is their social lives are interesting. You can just see a soap opera going on in the coop.
So we're talking pecking order.
Right.
Yeah.
Who's excluding who today? Who's in? I'm convinced that chickens must have Facebook accounts somewhere.
That's great. You're listening to Steve Brown from Cooperative Extension. He's an agriculture agent and knows all about chickens and is teaching chicken information all over the state, and he's here today. So if you're thinking about starting a flock in your backyard, it's a great time to get good information from Steve. You can call him at 550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752 around the state, or give us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So Steve, let's talk a little bit about some of the dangerous things that can happen with chickens. We talked about smell, and that's really cleaning up. But what about, are there diseases that your chickens can get?
Well, the biggest thing with chickens that I'm concerned with is there's a big debate out there nationally on whether you wash chicken eggs or don't wash chicken eggs. The people that say you shouldn't wash chicken eggs will say that drives the bacteria, E. coli in particular, into the egg.
Through the shell?
Through the shell. Mm-hmm. And then there are people that say you should wash the egg because you want to get that E. coli off the shell. Well, both camps are right.
How can that be, Steve?
Well, what it is, it's how you wash the chicken egg that's important. The best rule of thumb is to wash a chicken egg in 90 degree or warmer water. What that will do is force the membrane on the inside of the shell to expand, and it will push any bacteria out. Anything cooler than that can force the bacteria in. So whichever camp people are in, they're right. It's just how you do it.
That sounds tricky.
Well, I know we collect our eggs. We bring them in. We get the water hot. We wash them in the sink, soap and water, and then we put them in the dish dryer.
You mean in the rack?
In
the rack and let them dry. Mm-hmm. And do you test the water temperature?
It's gotten to the point where I know what the water temperature coming out of our hot water heater is.
You know the feel of it.
It's about 120 degrees.
Okay. Well, we've got another call. Tom, hello. You're talking to Hometown Alaska.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Happy to do it. What's your question?
Thanks. Well, you know, I grew up on a farm 100 years ago, and I recall these guys were just really messy and really noisy, and they required a lot of care and time. And I'm curious, you know, is this a reasonable hobby for somebody that's sort of retired like me to take on?
How many did you have?
20 or 30, you know, but I mean, I'm talking like two or three at this point. But, you know, I've got room, but it just seems to me like I recall that they required a lot of care.
Well, it's in some ways they do, in some ways they don't. There's a big difference between taking care of 20 or 30 chickens and, say, taking care of two chickens. It all depends upon your setup, too. I know the way my chickens are set up in the stall, I can leave for a weekend and not really have to worry about those birds because I've got a large feeder that can feed them for several days, and I have a waterer that could provide, a week or more of water. But what we like to do is hire the neighbor kids to come over and take care of them when we're away. And I think it's a little bit of an adventure for the kids, too. But I wouldn't say they're any more work than a dog or a cat.
Do you have a dog or a cat, Tom?
No, I don't anymore. I want a nice, safe, non overly laborious pet. But you know what you said. That was my next question. We travel, we do fishing, and we go away for two or three, 4 days at a time. So you've answered that question, and I like the idea. And I guess the other issue is I really, if I'm going to consider doing this, I'd really want to do it in a humane way. I mean, I see these horror stories, and I see on the internet, you know, the way these animals are raised in these tight, confined areas, and you know, there's no humanity or quite frankly, any respect for their lives. And I want to make sure that would be honored. So,
well, first, let me say this: when I was a kid, I used to take one of my chickens on vacation with me. And if we have time, I'll have to tell the story about the chicken that went to the summit of Pike's Peak. On our vacation. And here just a few weeks ago, I carried five chickens back from Fairbanks in my RV. So traveling with your chickens is possible. I'm not sure it would make you popular with other folks, but it's been done. I've even had baby geese in Times Square in New York City before. So they can travel. As far as treating chickens humanely, I think most people want to treat them humanely. Oftentimes, though, the ones that don't, it's ignorance that's the problem. And that's why we encourage people to take Chicken University or learn more about raising them, because sometimes in the wintertime, people think, well, we'll keep these chickens warm by packing them in, and they don't realize there can be an ammonia problem and the chickens suffocate.
Mm. Mm. Well, Tom, you sound like you might have chickens in your future.
Well, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to the information. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yale, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you. I was calling because I've heard that chickens can be used to keep your greenhouse warm, or you can somehow have a symbiotic relationship with a greenhouse. And I do have a nice roomy greenhouse, and considered bringing chickens in. Is that something that you're familiar with?
Well, I think what you're talking about is composting chicken manure. In the process of composting chicken manure, heat is a byproduct of that.
Mm-hmm.
To heat your greenhouse significantly, I think you would require a lot of chickens.
What about just keeping them in the greenhouse? Like you said, you use a horse stall, just using that as a containment area.
A lot of people do that. The thing you have to be careful about in keeping chickens in the greenhouse is that their manure doesn't come in contact with any leafy greens or things like that.
Oh, okay.
So you have to have your plants up maybe on shelves or something.
Well,
chickens can move around.
Chickens can get up there as well. Now, you can clip the trailing feathers of their wings to keep them from being able to fly up high, and that's not an inhumane thing. It just keeps them from getting enough lift on their wings, so that can keep them off stuff. The big problem in the greenhouse also, though, is them scratching and things.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you do have a chickweed problem in your greenhouse, they'll solve it for you in no time flat.
Which I do. That sounds great.
Well, they don't call it chickweed for no reason.
Okay. Well, I have that all over my yard, so that sounds like a deal winner to me.
I will say this. If you're looking for weed control in your garden, now this is not a solution for Anchorage, but ducks are better than chickens at controlling slugs and weeds.
Slugs, okay. Especially. Okay. Huh?
So, well, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling Yale. So I'm on the phone with Steve Brown from the Cooperative Extension, and he's answering all kinds of questions about raising chickens, starting a flock, how many can you have, what can go wrong. So we'll be right back after break. This is Kathleen McCoy, and you're on listening to Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
We're back on Hometown Alaska, and we're talking all things backyard chickens with Steve Brown from the Cooperative Extension, the teacher of Chicken University, and known around the state as the Chicken Guy because he travels all over Alaska. He says there's chickens in every single community in Alaska. So welcome back, Steve.
Thanks.
I wanted to ask you some more questions about, you know, how do you insulate a coop? How do you know your chickens are warm enough?
Well, insulating a coop, really, you can insulate it with anything. I like the foam boards that I'll put in between the walls, but you can use blown-in insulation. It just depends on the type of coop that you have. Really, the most important thing is to make sure it has an insulated roof, because that's where most of the heat escapes. What I do, or what most people do, is they'll put heat lamps on their chickens, and I'll shine a heat lamp on my chicken's perch. And it might be 20 below outside, but in that perch, you know, it's going to be 60 or 70 degrees. So the chickens can run around the coop, cool off, come back and get warm if necessary.
You know, when Fred Dewey called me this morning and talked about his chickens, he was really worried about them being cold. He spent the first year just really worrying about that, making sure they were warm. And he said they didn't seem to care. It would be, you know, really cold out, and they'd wander out. They don't like to stand in snow, I think he said.
That's right. They're not big fans of snow, but cold is not as big an issue as many people think. The goal that a chicken keeper in Alaska should set for themselves, though, is that their chickens are going to keep all their toes. occasionally, when I'm out outside of Anchorage, you'll run across chickens that are missing toes, and that's an indication that they got frostbite and lost their toes. As part of Chicken University, we teach people how to prevent that from happening. And just for people that are listening, the way you do it is you provide them flat perches that are about 6 inches across rather than round perches. The flat perches, the chickens don't like them as much, but it forces their feet to spread out. And then as they lay down, the heat from their body warms their feet and keeps them from getting frostbite.
So instead of like a peg to perch on, you want them on something flat?
A flat board. A 2x6 is what I recommend.
And then they sort of warm their feet as they sort of nestle down?
Right.
Okay. Now, another thing Fred told me is he built nesting boxes for each of his 5 chickens, but in the end, they all laid their eggs in one nest. They didn't care about all those other fancy things he had.
What happens, some people will make the mistake of making their nesting boxes too big. Basically, a nesting box needs to be about 10 inches by about 12 inches, and that forces the other hens to go to other boxes.
Because they can't get in.
They can't get in. But really, you only need a nesting box for about every 4 hens.
Ah, okay. So you can overdo it with the nesting boxes.
Right.
Okay. If you've got a question for Steve, it's just want you to know he's here and able to answer your questions. Give us a call at 550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752 around the state, or give us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And by the way, we've got some emails, so let me head over there, Steve, and see what people want to know. Would you talk about protecting chickens from bears, dogs, wolves, etc.? Do you recommend electric fences? What are the consequences for the chickens as well as the bears, dogs, etc. attacking them?
Okay, well, everything likes chicken. I mean, we don't have chicken McNuggets without good reason. Bears, wolves, dogs like chicken just as much as we do. However, with proper precautions, you can keep chickens in bear country. Electric fences are a great way to do that, okay, because bears like to investigate things with their nose, and they will, unlike a moose, okay, bears, it only takes one shock from an electric fence to make sure a bear doesn't want to come back.
You say bears are smarter than moose?
Well, yes, they are. The thing about the electric shock from the fence is it's high voltage, and it doesn't feel good, but it doesn't hurt the animal. As far as chickens, you know, they'll peck the fence and they'll get shocked too, but it won't hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing to do is to build a coop and put the electric fence on the outside of the coop. Now, the other thing is you want to take precautions to make sure the bears aren't attracted in the first place. And again, that gets back to being a good neighbor. Keep the feed, the extra feed, you know, in the garage or in the house. If there's leftover feed after you feed them, clean it up, okay? Keep their coop clean so that bears and animals aren't attracted to chicken manure, which, by the way, dogs love chicken manure. Evidently, it's quite tasty.
Oh, wow. That's now all you need is your dogs eating your chicken feed. That's not cool.
Well, and I always say that something has got a chicken's future in it.
And we're going to go to the phones. We've got lots of people calling with their chicken questions. Jody, you're on the air with Hometown Alaska.
Hi, thank you. Hey, I think it was virtually the same question. I live on Hillside and wasn't sure how safe it was to have chicken. But so you said with the electric fence and good hygiene, essentially, you can keep the birds and your neighbor safe.
Well, that's true. There are people that keep chickens in the bear corridors. I would say if you live in a known bear corridor or your house abuts one, to really think twice about keeping chickens in those areas. I mean, you can take, you know, you could take precautions to keep the bears away, but if you're in a known nuisance area, don't add to it.
Oh, okay. I thought so. We actually had a neighbor that had a few, but not for long. And I thought, oh, my goodness, I bet a bear came and got them.
Are you thinking about getting into chickens?
I would love to, but, I mean, I don't even have blackberries. I would love to have berries as well, berry bushes, but I'm afraid to.
You're afraid you're bringing bears in?
Right, exactly. They're here. I don't want to encourage them, so...
Well, I have to commend you on your attitude there, because that's an example of you being a good neighbor, okay? Even though you want the chickens, if you live in an area that you know is a potential for a problem, not keeping them is you know, good citizenship.
So you can feel good about that, but maybe you could think about an electric fence.
That's one possibility.
But I think just the smell and would maybe force them through the fence if they wanted to. So, no, I'll just skip it. But thanks so much. Really interesting topic, you guys.
Thanks for calling, Jody.
Okay, bye.
Got another call, Steve. Kimberly, you're on Hometown Alaska.
Hi. I am with a homeschool group, and we were wondering if Steve comes out to talk to families that are homeschooling kids. We just started incubating eggs about 6 days ago. And we are looking to have chickens and wondering if he'd come out and educate us.
Well, that's what we're in business for. We would love to do that. Where are you located?
4th and Boniface.
Okay.
Close by.
Yeah, I guess we're R3.
Well, what you should do is call the Cooperative Extension Service here in Anchorage and get the 4-H materials they have on raising poultry and incubation and things like that.
Okay, great.
Which,
great.
By the way, the 4-H materials are very, very popular with homeschoolers across the state.
Okay, cool. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thanks for calling, Kimberly. Now, I've got an email from somebody that just wants to shout out how wonderful chickens are, so let me just share this with you, Steve. We have chickens, and all the neighborhood children enjoy coming over to visit and learn about where our food comes from. We have a list of chicken sitters that love to give the girls kitchen scraps and like the different colored eggs. We have left for a month plus, so there's somebody who doesn't worry about traveling. Chicken TV is our favorite channel. The best thing we ever did was get a subscription to Backyard Poultry. This magazine is the best, has great advice, ideas, and valuable information.
Well, that's right. And 2 years ago, they actually featured Alaska as an example of you can grow chickens in the Arctic.
Wow. Have you been up to Barrow and there's chickens in Barrow?
I have not been to Barrow, but I know there are chickens there because people will talk about hearing a rooster crow.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's amazing. Well, I wanted to make sure we get some good information out for people. I wanted to know about, you know, if you're thinking about knowing where your food is coming from and it's chickens, you know, giving you eggs from your backyard, what about the feed for those chickens? Are you having to ship it up from the lower 48?
Currently, most of the chicken feed in Alaska is being shipped up. There are a few suppliers in Alaska that are making Alaska-based feed. I know there's one in Palmer whose feed is made out of salmon products, and that's a very popular feed. The university is hoping to do research into developing local cropping systems for chickens, determining how to grow things that we can feed them. Now, obviously, chickens are fed a lot of barley in this state, but we're still not self-supportive as far as feed in Alaska.
Right. So even if you're able to get some local, can you get local barley here in Anchorage? I mean, how people would go about doing that?
I imagine you can get local barley. It would be coming down from Delta Junction. But some people, I do know of a farmer out in Bethel who grows his own barley to feed his chicken flock.
Just to feed his chickens. That's great. Well, folks, give us a call if you've got questions about chickens or if you've got tips that you want to share with people because you're already raising chickens and people are starting to get into it. You can give us a call at 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752. Or shoot us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. I'm on with Steve Brown, who teaches Chicken University for the Cooperative Extension and grew up in Vernon, Texas, as a 4-H'er with chickens. So he's been from here to there on chickens, and he can really answer a lot of questions. Let's see, I wanted to ask you about illnesses your chickens can get and how do you avoid that? We had a caller interested in a chicken that bloated. So what kinds of things can happen?
Well, the biggest disease that people have to fear with chickens is something called coccidiosis. And that's an intestinal disease that will sicken adult birds. They'll recover, but it will kill the chicks in most cases.
Ooh.
Coccidiosis is almost always present in all bird flocks, but there are certain conditions that can make the birds more susceptible to it. With chicks, the problem with them is when they get wet, it makes them more susceptible to it, and they almost always die from it. So that's the big disease.
How do you know they have it?
Well, the birds will become droopy. They'll mop around. You know, they don't seem their perky selves.
Chipper selves.
They look unkempt. The little chicks, their wings will droop. They'll hold their head in a position and act like they're really tired.
Now, Steve, we've got some calls coming in, so let's go to the phones. Ingrid, you're on Hometown Alaska.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. We've had some chickens now for 4 years. They're kept in a carport in the backyard that we've basically wired off and put up some plywood walls and plastic to sort of keep the worst of the weather out. But I'm wondering, would it be better for them if I actually made a coop that would more enclose the warm air and keep them warm? We haven't had any problems so far.
They would like that. They like to huddle together, and so, you know, a coop kind of within a coop would be something that they would like, especially if they're getting 4 years old is getting pretty old for a chicken.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, we're planning on adding a few new ones. We had one pass away. We have two left, so we wanted to add a few. And so we're getting ready to put them outside. They're currently living in my bathtub as an incubator.
These are the stories that dissuade people from raising chickens.
Yeah, they're 4 weeks old now, and what would be the recommended age to put them outside?
As soon as they have all of their adult feathers grown in, which will be here pretty, I would say, in another couple of weeks, they should be ready to go.
Okay.
What I do recommend, though, is if you're putting them in with older birds, the best thing to do is wait a few weeks till it's dark outside,
mm-hmm.
and then you take them in and you nestle the birds in with the existing birds in the dark. And then everybody wakes up in the morning, and chickens don't have much of a memory, and it's like, oh, you've always been here.
Okay. I'd actually been planning on just putting a screen between the two and let them see each other for a while, for a couple weeks, and then actually letting them combine.
Well, you know, that's exactly what I'm doing with some younger birds I've got in my flock right now.
Okay. So that would work as well as putting them on the roost?
I think so.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you so much. I'm so glad that you guys have this program on.
Thanks for calling, Ingrid.
Thank you.
Now, we've invited Allie Barker, and she's on the line holding for us. Allie raises lots of chickens and brings her eggs into the Spinard Farmers Market. Hi, Allie.
Hi. How you doing, Kathleen?
So welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thanks.
How's your flock?
Oh, they're doing really well. Yeah, they're happy. We actually just finished building another chicken tractor and have it out in a new area where we're going to actually grow food probably next year. So we are growing a cover crop there this year, which is peas and beans and vetch and oats and barley and rye. And then we move the chickens in their tractor around on it every day so they get fresh green salad.
So that was something we wanted to talk about, is whether a chicken tractor could work.
Allie, would you describe for the audience just what a chicken tractor is for folks that don't know?
Yeah, a chicken tractor is basically a portable mobile. And, I mean, there are all sorts of ways that you could build one. And, you know, we've built them on skis or wheels, but you're basically just building a lighter weight coop that's screened in on the bottom, has some protection on the top. And the ones we've built have a spot for the birds to roost and nest boxes in the upper level. So you're kind of combining a coop with a run, an area for them to run. And then we just move the actual tractor, when we're calling it a tractor, this chicken-powered tractor, with wheels on. We're just moving it, you know, probably every 2 days, kind of depending on how much they eat. And it's one of the simplest things to build. It could definitely be done in Anchorage in people's backyards if you had a little bit of space. I mean, for example, we're probably moving them around a 1,200 square foot area. And you figure if they spend about a day on each site, you have a 30-day rotation. And when you move the chickens, you can throw seed, rye or cover crop or something behind them.
And the fertilizer is already there?
Exactly.
But now, this isn't fertilizer that's been neutralized, right?
No, it hasn't, but it's you know, there are different ways to deal with that. You can either kind of throw some soil over and then seed it, and because you're not, you know, growing food, you're just growing green manure, you're adding that nitrogen to the soil, which will eventually add a lot of organic matter to your soil and help boost fertility for growing in the future.
Right. And the chicken manure breaks down pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's really incredible.
Hmm.
I mean, we have, you know, when we build our compost piles with chicken manure and vegetable scraps and things from our farm here at Chugach Farm, we have, we'll get the piles up to 130 degrees with chicken manure within probably a couple days.
Wow.
That's how hot it is. And it'll last for a while, which is really a benefit to composting with chicken manure.
Yeah, chicken manure is so high in nitrogen that if you do it right, you can even set your compost on fire with it.
Yeah.
Wow. Weren't you talking, Steve, about trading? People would trade chicken manure, or, you know, it was a hot commodity because it was
yes.
so rich?
People want it. And Allie, in case your audience doesn't know, Allie is one of our leading organic farmers in the state. And Allie, what's your opinion of chicken manure as fertilizer?
Oh, it's the best. Absolutely. I mean, we kind of, when people say, oh, you can come and get some of our manure, we don't ask questions. Okay.
Happy to serve.
It is an amazing amendment. And the best part about it is if you're monitoring the temperature in your compost pile, and this is a whole nother show, probably, Kathleen, you could do right on composting. But if you monitor the temperature in your pile and you're getting up to 130 for a few days, well, you can be sure that you've killed all the pathogens, and then, you know, there's a whole process to that. But it's a lot easier to do with chicken manure. So it would be great for backyard.
You ever think about selling some of your chicken manure down at the Spinard Farmers Market?
No, we...
You need it all?
We'll never have enough.
Okay.
We'll just say that, you know. That's really the base for our fertility here.
Now, you and I talked a little bit about... Steve and I talked a little bit about food sourcing, and I know that was something you wanted to bring up about local food. So go ahead and tell us what you do to feed your chickens.
Yeah, we're really psyched on sourcing and purchasing local ingredients for our chickens year-round. And, I mean, one of the reasons is because our overall goal with the chickens is to shorten that gap with our food security from the Lower 48. Are you still there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
And another reason is just because it's, you know, if everyone has a few chickens, it's more sustainable for them. They're understanding where their food comes from, closer relationship, a wonderful thing for kids to have to do, you know. So, but we've always looked at it as, you know, it doesn't make much sense to raise an animal if you have to bring in all your food from somewhere else. It's just a lot of fuel.
So what do you feed yours?
What we're doing is we're feeding local barley and salmon and alfalfa and beet pellets, and we do and then we also have kind of an herbal program. So all our chickens get apple cider vinegar, probiotics, and cayenne, and they get that's the bulk of it. And the main two ingredients being the barley and the salmon. And you can get local barley in Palmer. We're growing some barley mixed in with our other cover crops right now. But, you know, we're actually not feeding a lot of grain right now. When the chickens are in their tractors, that's
what they're eating.
Yeah, they still do need some grain, but they're getting probably half of their diet now. They'll get just moving them around in this rich kind of salad mix that we have for them.
Hmm.
And we're giving them dandelions and chickweed and all that stuff every day.
Give them my dandelions and my chickweed.
Yeah.
Just because you're way out there in Chickaloon, what do you do for predators, Allie?
Well, we've got roosters are our predator control for the most part. I mean, you know, I think that you have to we've accepted that if we're going to let our chickens out and run around, they have to learn how to, you know, hide as best they can. And the roosters are actually incredible at kind of herding them all up and protecting them if they are seeing birds flying above. It doesn't mean an owl won't get one here and there, but we've been pretty fortunate. We've got old fish nets, old gill nets people have given us over the top of one of our coops. And then, of course, when all the chickens, we have two different tractors, and when they're in there, they're protected.
They're safe, yeah.
Birds and dogs couldn't get in.
Well, Allie, I just want to thank you for taking the time. I know you're farming, you're busy, so thanks for calling in and sharing some of your real experience with us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. And if anyone's, I am teaching some backyard layer workshops this summer. If anyone's interested, We really focus on how to source local ingredients versus GMO corn and soy for birds and and we talk about chicken tractors and composting and all that. So feel free to check us out at chugachfarm.com.
That's great. We've added that link to our site so people can find your classes there too.
All right. Thanks, Allie.
Thanks so much, Kathleen.
Thank you. And Susan, you've been holding for a while. What's your question?
Well, I was wondering if you can do like sledge or any wild grains that grow around, you know, in the area.
Oh, well, sure, you could. I mean, chickens are naturally made to scavenge, well, I shouldn't say scavenge, hunt for their own food.
Well, what if I went with like a low basket and just, you know, knocked the sledge seeds off? I mean, can they eat that type of thing?
You know, I don't know. We would have to see what the nutritional breakdown of those things are. And I just don't know what it would be at this point.
Okay. So I would take that to the Extension Service?
We've got charts and books that'll tell us what's in it.
So just call?
Sure.
Oh, okay. Well, I appreciate your time.
Thanks for
calling, Susan.
Thank you. Bye.
So, Steve, we've got about a minute or so left. Let's get to one of our emails. We've got we have five chickens, they write, and during the day they are in a portable pen in our grassy yard. Sounds like a chicken tractor. I move the pen to different spots in the yard 3 to 4 times a day. We also have a well on our property. Should we be concerned about contaminating our well?
I would say try to keep everything 100 feet away from the wellhead. That's kind of the standard across the country as far as wellhead protection. You know, if you're moving it that often, I would consider that kind of a low density situation for the manure. So I don't think you have a problem, but, you know, make sure you've got a covered wellhead and things like that.
Okay. Here's another quick question that came in on email. What do I do about mice in the chicken coop?
Mice in the chicken coop, keeping the feed cleaned up, making sure that you've got the feed in steel trash cans so that the mice can't get into it, and setting out the occasional trap or getting a cat.
Wow. He wants to know, do you have mice in your horse stall?
Every once in a while they'll show up.
Mm-hmm. But you just, by cleanliness and tidying up, you manage it.
Well, we have a new cat now, too.
Okay. I know one tip that came from Fred Dewey was that in his heated water bowl, he puts a jar in there so that the chickens can't sit in the water bowl. So,
that's a good idea.
So anyway, I just want to thank you so much, Steve, for the time and the energy and all the information. And we've had great callers this hour. Coming up next week on Hometown Alaska, a new host will join the Hometown Alaska team. Peter Dunlap-Scholl will talk to you about social media and how we use it. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Dave Waldron engineered today's program. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.